Welcome everyone to the February 14, 2024 Water Resources and Watershed Committee meeting. Before we start, I have to make some announcements. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. I would like to remind the public that are attending that there are common cards outside. Please complete and turn them into the admin. Expedite your questions and comments. The procedure for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. Then the committee comes to a consensus to move an item to the board for consideration. Any PowerPoints shown at tonight's meeting will be posted to the SCD Water website. All committees are present at the moment. And we move on to item number one, Pledge of Allegiance. Director,
please place your hand over your heart. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Director Cooper. We move on to item number two, public comment. Are there any members of the public, I would like to make a public comment at this time. No one in attendance? No. Okay. Let's move on to item number three, recommend authorizing the general manager to enter into contract with Intera Incorporated for groundwater flow mode improvement under the Water Resilience Initiative. This item is presented by Ms. Pitbaugh virtually.
Yes,
she's okay. Online. She is online. Ms. Pitbaugh, ready when you are.
Thank you. Good evening. Item number three in your packets is a written report requesting board authorization for the general manager to enter into a contract with Intera Incorporated for groundwater flow model improvements in support of the Water Resilience Initiative in the amount of approximately $196,000. Under the Water Resilience Initiative, we're seeking to use the existing groundwater flow model to assess improved management strategies for the Upper Santa Clara River East Basin in the context of an integrated resources management strategy. The goal of the proposed alternative groundwater management evaluations is to determine the most plausible and cost-effective actions that bolster SCB Water's water supply resilience while meeting the agency's ecological objectives. This first task order seeks a consultant to review the hydrogeologic conceptual model and provide recommendations for future enhancements to improve the efficiency and quality of modeling workflow inputs, outputs, and visualizations and communications to support effective stakeholder engagement and timely decision-making under the Water Resilience Initiative. We would like to evaluate enhancements or implementation of new tools and or applications to the existing groundwater flow model to improve the understanding of SCB Water staff, board, and stakeholders of the natural constraints of the groundwater system and the potential for new projects and programs at enhancing values from the water, from the system in the context of water supply and ecological benefits. Improving efficiency and repeatability of model development and post-processing can improve confidence and transparency because quality checks can be built into automated procedures and assumptions can be clearly documented and more efficiently and effectively tested. As described in the committee memo, we invited the two highest scoring consultants to submit task order proposals under the refined request for qualifications for the Water Resilience Initiative. Both task order proposals received addressed most of our needs. However, Intera was selected because of a couple of distinguishing factors. Intera demonstrated how evaluations of groundwater management actions would be assessed in the context of SCB Water's broader supply portfolio, as well as against other investment options, such as participation in storage outside the basin, acquiring of new water supplies, and implementation of additional conservation measures. Second, Intera also proposed developing what they name model emulators to rapidly screen potential groundwater management strategies and prioritize alternatives for more in-depth evaluation. And finally, they did end up also being the lower bidder. Therefore, we'd like to recommend authorizing the general manager to enter into a contract with Intera for the work I just described. I'd be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
All right. Before we open this up for questions and comments, we do have a public comment on this item from Ms. Noltenmeyer. Ms. Noltenmeyer, please go ahead.
Yes, I did read this and I read through it, and I don't think it should be granted. And it doesn't, it would be very beneficial for somebody, but I don't think that's right, especially by it, if you want to put it before the full board, that's another thing. But to grant something like this at this level, I don't think it's appropriate. I'm just seeing too much of it. And when I read this, I really don't think it should be approved at all. But at best, it should go through the full board, not just this one. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Noltenmeyer. Just a quick FYI, the full board will see this. We're just... this is a committee that just evaluates it for any further details or anything like that, but any decision made will be done by the board. Okay, let's open up the questions and comments. Directors? President Martin?
Thank you, Najma, for your presentation. I just would simply ask, the staff is looking to enhance its existing groundwater flow model. How did we determine, and I'm not arguing that we don't need to, I'm just want to get an understanding. How did we determine that our existing groundwater flow model needed to be enhanced?
There are several factors. One is staff that has been working with the groundwater flow model and our existing consultants, we have recognized some needs for improvements in some of the quality of the input to the model. As an example, we have an empirical model for recharge, and is grid specific. So if we wanted to start evaluating groundwater management actions in certain local, you know, more localized areas where we might want to change the grid size or, other parameters, we would need to update that compiler. Additionally, to be able to change that, you know, these climate change projections that DWR is coming up with and will, you know, require water agencies to assess, you know, as part of the urban water management plan and other planning studies, we would need, you know, a compiler capable of that. Other factors that are more just workflow, automating workflow. So we know that the process for inputting data and then just analyzing and interpreting output data is very time-consuming. It can be automated with scripts that would reduce the cost and allow us to run more.
Oh.
Nandra, you might want to just try turning off your camera. Sometimes that helps with the connection.
We would like to work better for us.
Okay, I'm sorry. Ms. Pitwalk, can you just repeat maybe your last two, three sentences? We had a connection issue.
Okay, I'm going to also stop my video just in case.
So starting with the script.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're trying to break up a little bit.
Okay, one second. Can you hear me now? Is it better?
It's better, yes.
So the last few phrases I was saying pertain to workflow, automating workflows, such as, you know, right now we know that it takes a lot of time to pre-process input data and post-process output data so that, you know, they can be synthesized and interpreted. You know, by automating some of these procedures through scripting, for instance, we can reduce costs substantially and be able to run more scenarios.
Thank you very much. I think, you know, there's great value in using the latest technology and having the best understanding we can have of groundwater flow. So I'm going to support this. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, can I add?
Absolutely.
Items in response. And Nigel, correct me if I'm wrong. Part of this, when we have been recalibrating the model and developing it for the GSP, the modelers and the reviewers determined there is some improvements that could be done. But when Najwa is working in the Water Resiliency Initiative, there is actually more improvements that need to be done on the groundwater model so that we can move data from the groundwater model to the reliability model, and also to move data from the habitat suitability model to the groundwater model. And so the connectivity between the suite of models that we are developing for the decision making need us to improve our groundwater, how it's processed data, how it's automated that. One of the things just we wanted to add to what Nigel mentioned, most of the processes now is done by a consultant for us, and we have to hire a consultant every time we are trying to do a model run. Even a simple model run, we're not able to run it in-house until we have someone to do it. Part of this work is to, as Nigel mentioned, automate a lot of the processes so that we'll be able to run the model, our staff can run the model internally.
Okay.
Good.
Marks?
Nigel Horlale. So with these model improvements, help position our agency to respond to the comments that were received on the groundwater sustainability plan.
Nigel, do you want me to take that question? Did you hear the question?
I did hear it, and I'll just say, so this, you know, when this task order request was developed, it was before receiving comments for the GSP, but I think some of the needs actually fit in with some of the comments, you know, received from DWR. But I think, you know, specifically this task order, we are just looking at the groundwater model itself. We have and asking for recommendations. We're not even, you know, making any changes at this point. The stress was, you know, to look for consultants who could really look at our needs comprehensively. So look at the groundwater management from a broader context, in that, you know, it's using pumping groundwater can help with water supply reliability, but we also want to meet our ecological objectives in the Santa Clara River.
So it's fair to say that we'll probably see something in the future coming to us to with respect to the groundwater models to address some of the GSP comments.
So if I can add one thing, as example, part of this task is looking into the hydrogeologic conceptual model. And that was one of the first questions that we received, the comments that we received from DWR about our GSP. So we really need to revisit our understanding of the hydrogeologic conceptual model. This is part of the work that this improvement is going to look into. They are going to be evaluated by a separate entity who have not been involved in the development of the GSP, and they can give us feedback on what we are missing, what we are taking into consideration. So I definitely, this is done before we receive the comments, but it seems that there is some overlap areas that we are going to be able to take information that's produced from this effort and feed in the GSP. At the end of the day, the water resources, the Water Resiliency Initiative is going to have a component that's going to feed into the GSB and improve the GSB, and that's work that we're putting together right now.
Thank you.
Okay, just follow up on that. I see that there's going to be some help with community engagement, and that there's going to be an improved visualization of the model output. Is this, you know, public-facing model output, or is it currently how it's being visualized? It's not conducive to any sort of analysis, or it's very difficult to read. Like, what would be the difference between what the vendor will provide in terms of visual of the model output versus to what we have right now? What's the difference between the two? Or what would be the difference?
We are looking for more advanced 3D subsurface visualizations. So to make it, you know, easier on a layperson or a wider audience to be able to understand conceptually what is happening in the basin. So if we tested a scenario with with water levels in the subsurface, we can show surface water, groundwater interaction, and so on. But to do that, again, we kind of are at the infancy of that. You know, we've had some visuals, but we would like to use, you know, more technology and scripted, you know, automated workflows to be able to produce that seamlessly.
Is that something that our staff will be able to do after this is delivered to us?
So one of the requirements is to get, you know, source code. And, you know, one optional task, which is not part of, you know, this authorization, is to provide training to staff. But we are requesting, you know, all scripts and, you know, source code so that we could, you know, potentially do it in-house.
Okay. All right, understood. Any other comments, questions from the vendors? I really don't see any reason why this were not to be on consent calendar.
Agreed.
Yep. Okay.
Actually, this item has already been on the February 20th board.
Okay.
Because of time change, we have to put it on before the packet. So it's already on there as a discussion item.
Okay, understood. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's move on to item 4.1, status of groundwater recharge feasibility study presented by Ernesto Velasquez. Mr. Velasquez.
All right. Good evening, everyone. Happy Valentine's Day. So, There are so many questions that need to be answered in order to fully implement a full-scale recharge program. We want to hone in on one of the most basic questions, and that is, can the agency implement a recharge program locally? Next slide, please, Zini. From a physical standpoint, from a geologic standpoint, can our local basin sustain a recharge program? And we conducted some studies over the last couple of years to help answer those questions. I provided this committee periodic updates as we completed some of the field work, but I would like to go through and just kind of do a little bit of background and a little bit of review just to make sure everyone's on the same page. So we'll start off with a map showing the two recharge study sites. I'll take you through some pictures outlining some of the field work that we completed, and we'll review the findings of the studies that just recently concluded, and we'll finish off with some next steps that are recommended as part of the findings of this study. But go ahead and next slide, please. So the two sites that we were looking at for implementing a recharge program is the Castaic location there on the top left. Next, please, Yumi. If you take the 5 freeway up to Castaic, just below the Castaic Lagoon off the Ridge Route, the agency has some property known as the Castaic School Site that where we conducted these field investigations. That's on the west end of the basin. On the east end of the basin, we have the Pine Tree location. Thank you, Yumi. Right off of the Sand Canyon exit off the Fort Worth freeway, there's some land there that is a mix of both agency-owned land and city-owned land. And that was the eastern portion of our recharge studies. So the upcoming slides, I'll show you the fieldwork that was completed. And the work that was completed at both sites was nearly identical. So it'll be a mix of both the Pine Tree and Castaic portions of the fieldwork. Next, please, Jimmy. So to hone in on that question, we wanted to take a look at the geology of each site. So we completed a geophysical survey, as you can see there on the left. We used an ERT method and the dual LEM system, which you can think of as ground penetrating radar technologies, help us peer underneath the soil of the site. We also conducted infiltration testing, shown there in the middle. The infiltration testing was really to give us an idea of how much water this site would be able to sustain. We did that by excavating a test pit there and introducing a known volume of water and measuring the rate at which the soil was able to absorb that water. And in order to do that, we used a transducer there shown on the top right. That is a little device that measures atmospheric pressure. And when you put it underwater, you're able to see how many feet of water are above the transducer, and it can read minute fluctuations within the water level. We also use the transducer not only for the infiltration testing, but for water level monitoring over the period of a year or so at our monitoring point there. Next slide, please. In addition to that, we wanted to get physical samples of the geology below, so we did some borehole sampling. In order to do that, we had a drill rig, and you can see there on the top left, we have a limited access drill rig. That was really helpful and helped in getting us to navigate some of the tight spots over there in the Pine Tree area, as well as staying on the existing paths that our operators use for well service, and being able to navigate in between vegetation to minimize the impacts to the river. In the center shot, there's the drill rig using the auger to actually drill the boreholes. We drilled about 3 different boreholes on that site, 40 feet deep, and we were able to take some soil samples. On the top left, you'll see those core samples taken every 5 to 10 feet or so to get an idea of the soil content at various depths. So that was cataloged and also taken to the lab for analysis. We were able to corroborate the physical borehole samples with the ground penetrating radar readings to show that there's a confidence in both the readings. So two measurements showing the same thing is always a good thing to see. But all of this data was taken and incorporated into the groundwater model for both areas so we can run some modeling. Next slide, please, Jimmy. So the findings. For Castaic, we found that the alluvial thickness was about went down about 150 feet. In some areas, it only went down about 50 feet. So the that gave us plenty of room to work with as far as great permeable soils. And that's reflected in the infiltration rate there of 7 to 12 feet, which is more than adequate to implement a recharge program. These modeling show that the site could support about 5,000 acre feet per year of managed aquifer recharge. There was a caveat that during wet years, when the water table is above average, higher than average, we would have to do some monitoring to make sure that any recharge activities wouldn't simply surface in Cascade Creek that's adjacent and just run downstream. That's more of an operational consideration that we have to take into account for future efforts, but it was good to see that in the modeling. As far as the pine tree location, the alluvial thickness was about 180 feet, went down deeper, and in some places only went to 130 feet or so. The infiltration testing rate was pretty incredible, 40 to 46 feet per day. When we were filling it when we were filling up the test pits, it can essentially take whatever water we were putting into it, it would soak it up. I would say like a sponge, but it was faster than a sponge. It was pretty incredible. The site, according to the modeling, the site can support a minimum of 5 to 10,000 acre feet per year to manage aquifer recharge. And so the bottom line was for both sites, from a geologic standpoint, there's no fatal flaws in prohibiting us from implementing a full-scale recharge program. But we did do a little bit more work. Next slide, please, Uni. We also conducted some particle tracking analysis. And what that was for is essentially allowing us to map how long the water would take to travel downstream from the recharge location. Next, please, Uni. So you can see from the recharge location to that diamond. That diamond is the North Oaks Wells. And the North Oaks Wells are about 3 miles or so from the recharge location. And we found in particle tracking that it would take approximately 9 to 10 months to reach that point. So that's not even halfway out of the basin, but 9 to 10 months, that's a decent amount of travel time. That means that we could potentially use this recharge water as local storage for dry year supply. That could help relieve some of the stress from our banking programs during a dry year. We had that local supply here, as well as providing some local management of the resources rather than having to work with everyone trying to get water out of the banking programs. But further analysis will need to be done on those travel times. But a rough estimate to that point there on the map, about 10 months of travel time for recharged water. Now, there are still plenty of questions that need to be answered. Next up, please, Yumi. But now that we know that from a physical standpoint, we can do it, the following question would be, how can we do it? How can we construct and implement a recharge program that would really benefit our customers in our area? Next slide, please. So to get at that question, some recommended next steps would be looking into project easement or land acquisition. For Castaic, the agency owns that land, so that's pretty simple. But for Pine Tree, that's a mix of both city-owned property and agency-owned property. So exploring whether we'd like to have a lease agreement or whether we want to go towards a land acquisition would be something that we need to look at. For engineering analysis, there's so much work that would need to be done for the engineering portion of the analysis. We would have identifying a point source where the recharge would happen, identifying pipeline routes, conceptual designs, doing cost estimates, going through some different operational scenarios, identifying infrastructure constraints or improvements that would be needed, just a lot of work that needs to be done on the engineering side. As far as the water quality characterization, we would be introducing a decent amount of water to these areas, so we would need to do an anti-degradation analysis. Developing permitting strategies would also be recommended. There's numerous amount of agencies that would be involved, the regional board, CDFW, the flood control district, Army Corps, and we would, conducting CEQA, we would really need to develop permitting strategy to see how we would navigate those waters. And then not lastly, but another important point would be conducting additional modeling. As this would be a multi-year project and models are improved over that period, new data becomes available, different operational conditions may arise, and additional modeling would also be recommended. With that, the next slide, please. That concludes my presentation, but I do want to make one comment in that this was a multi-year effort, and it wasn't just a water resources effort. The operational department, our operations staff, our engineering staff, different agency staff really helped in completing that field work, which really took it to the finish line. And I just wanted to acknowledge those efforts, and this was really a team effort, and we have great staff that was able to help see this through. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Velasquez. Are there any questions, comments from the public in attendance? Directors, comments, questions? Mr. Gruber.
The pine tree area, is that out, right out by the Facey Medical Clinic out there?
That would be west of that, but near that area. It would be right behind
the dentist office?
The in and out on off of Sand Canyon.
Oh, right off of Sand Canyon.
Yep.
Just right there where Burgies and In and Out and all of those are.
Exactly. Okay. And there's a storage facility on the south side of the 14, it'd be right around there.
That's interesting because there's still water running in the river down in that area this year, which you would think would be going underground, but I don't understand why it's staying on the surface there.
Yeah. It's hard to tell from the maps. There is the main stem of the river, and the areas we were looking at were maybe 5 to 8 feet above that level, just kind of the shoulders of the river, I would say.
Yeah, having 9 months before it gets down to the first set of wells there, that's terrific. That's we could even put some of the water factory water up in that area, and that should meet the requirements of reclaimed water back in there, too. That's very good.
Thank you.
Yeah, 5,000, 10,000 acre feet.
And we've got a pipeline that is out there that's not used or doesn't need to be used.
Yep. And annual demands average around 70 or so. So if 7,000 acre feet of recharge would roughly be about 10% of our annual demand, so it's not a trivial amount.
How would that look like? Can you go back on the presentation, show me the sites?
Which site? Was there five?
Yeah, this one. Sorry, new to this, but can you paint a picture? How would a recharge site look like? What sort of infrastructure would we need here?
Depends. I would say it depends, and that's part of the analysis that we would like to do, whether it's spreading basins or collecting some of the stream flows. It would really depend on the application there, but at least we know geologically it would support, those infiltration rates would support whatever it is that we'd be able to do there.
So if I might add, because that's one of those areas that I have worked most of my life, and it's mostly the thing I think the assumption here is it's going to be on a spreading basin, and spreading basin is just, you know, you are going to build a basin, create an artificial basin that you should have pipelines connected to that. You have a discharge point, and then you have monitoring how much water you're going to put every day, and you continue keep adding that water to the spreading basin. There is a potential in both sides. The land is a big piece of land on those two locations. But as Ernesto mentioned, you know, depending on how we're going to at the end structure this and construct it, it's just going to be, you know, how big is the basins? Is it connected basins? Is it one basin? And so we're going to, that's part of the questions that we are asking ourselves right now.
Understood. And we've seen some in Central Valley too.
Yes, Central Valley.
But it's a very complicated SCADA system, which was just a one manual valve. Understood that. Director Marks, I think you had a question.
I think that this is a wonderful opportunity. And I applaud Ernesto as presenting the effort over multiple years. Mentioned COVID and everything else. I think that there still are a lot of important questions that need to be answered. You know, the source of the water. It's great that it takes 10 months to get to the first set of wells. We have lots of wells downstream. But I think there's still question of modeling that needs to be done, Mr. Truman, both given the long-term hydrologic cycles, you're also going to be able to, capture 80% of that water. Some portion may end up under certain hydrologic conditions spilling over into Ventura County. So I think it's be really important to take the next steps and to have staff come back to us with a proposal as to whether it's a more detailed feasibility study that starts to tell us how much that might cost, and what are the alternatives for getting water to the sites. So I'm actually pretty excited by the results, particularly up in Pine Tree.
Yeah.
I didn't anticipate 40 or 50 feet of
no, that's 30 acres.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. So what's the timeline? When's the next time we hear from you?
We have set aside some budget for this upcoming fiscal year. We would like to begin scoping out some of the work for the next steps within this fiscal year, but the majority of that will be next year. Within the next few months, we will be working on finalizing scope. We can present that scope here, committee, if you would like, take a look at that before we finalize anything. But you can anticipate that within the next couple months. I'm not sure what the final date will be, but sooner rather than later.
Mr. Chair, if I may add, please. I think just to add to Ernesto, and by the way, I wanted to congratulate Ernesto. He submitted an abstract about this work to the International Managed Aquifer Recharge Conference that will be in Tucson, Arizona, and it was accepted. And so he's going to Tucson to present about phase one. And hopefully the next time when we have this, this is actually alternating between United States and Australia. So next time, hopefully the phase two, we're going to fly with him, Steve and I, to go to Australia. To present phase two, hopefully. So we are planning.
Committee should go.
Definitely. the next steps, as you asked, we are trying to put the scope together. What are some of these questions? And that's, we really appreciate your feedback today. that what are some of the questions to add it to the list of questions and build scope of work, trying to finalize that in the next couple of months. And then we are planning to start work as soon as the beginning of the new fiscal year so that we can, during the next year, we'll have some of these results ready for us to incorporate into the urban water management. And after getting feedback from the board.
Okay, well, we look forward to that presentation.
Yeah, the Castaic site, that one, well, Pine Tree, I can see where we would get a good recovery from Pine Tree because we've got wells all downstream from there. Castaic, you don't know how much we get to really keep, whether it runs on over to Ventura or not in that area.
Yeah, one of the concepts here that are going to tail on to this is the relationship with the downstream water users, right? So when we get through the technical ability to demonstrate how long the water stays in the basin or doesn't, I think that's an opportunity for us to continue to coordinate with the folks that we know down there, and there's mutual benefit to a project like this. And so being able to align that, if we can come up with a technical way to underpin, how much stayed and how much went, I think there's an opportunity to have partnerships in this that aren't just in our area, but are downstream also. And we've done that, right, with the Castaic releases already with United Water Conservation District, right? We've come up with a formula of those releases and who pays for what. And so I think we can build upon that and do something with this as well as if it's determined feasible in the down the road. So
the Castaic site might also be a resource for us as far as managing groundwater surface water interaction. And our CEF process and habitat suitability works for the stickleback and could be part of a process that helps bring fish and wildlife along.
Does the committee think it'd be a good idea to have the board give this presentation, or so?
I think so. If time allows it, absolutely. If not, my suggestion would be to email this presentation with a brief summary to all the directors. So, sure, you do that, because I know that a lot on the board are looking forward to seeing the results of this little study.
Yeah, might expand the presentation a little bit to the board about potential benefits.
That working with United and Ventura.
For the state.
Being able to build a project to get their water into the ground as well, which could result in us getting some of their water.
New York Stock Exchange, right? No, this is great. Thank you. Please check that, and then the two options would be great.
Sure. Okay,
thank you. Thank you for the presentation.
That's good. Thank you.
And yes, happy job. All right, let's move to item 4.2, status of water supplies, presented by Ms. Sarah Flory. Ms. Flory, whenever you're on.
Okay. Okay, everything look good on your end?
We can see you, we can hear you. That's good.
Hey. Well, I'm going to make this pretty quick because it's Valentine's Day and we all know you need to be with your significant others this evening. Don't want you to get in trouble. So I'm going to do a quick status of water supply report. Thought this was a cool photo, a little some releases from Oroville that have been happening. So they are using the new spillway. It's working out nicely. With regards to SUV precipitation, the graph kind of shows us our monthly, the monthly precipitation we've got in the bars shows us this year, this water year. The orange line gives us an idea of how crazy it was last year. And then the blue lines are historical average. So you can see we kind of had a slow start, got above average in December, dropped back down in January. And then so far in February, it's actually been quite a lot of precipitation. We're already two times more than our historical or our average for February. And we're only halfway through. We're sitting at about 123% of our historical average to date. So we're ahead of the game right now. And we have about almost 16 inches so far in this water year. And our average is right around 17. So we're doing very well. But note that low point in January for some slides ahead. Statewide precipitation, we're right at about 100% of historical average right now. You can see all the greens and blues. That means, you know, we're at 100% or more. There's still a few areas that are lacking or kind of behind, but overall, the state's doing very well with regards to precipitation. Snowpack, you've got two graphs here. The left-hand side one kind of breaks down the different measurements in the north, the central, and the south area. And the line that is this year is kind of hidden. It's that royal blue color. You can see the top one says 56 there. I think the other one is a 51 and a 50. But we are still below our historical average for this time of year. But that just gives you a sense of kind of what other years look like, the wet ones and the dry ones. And we're right kind of near average. And then statewide, you can see on the right-hand side, we have been catching up. We haven't reached that historical average yet, but the trend is going in the right direction. So that's always nice to see. And I believe that, well, I can't see my notes because my face is in the way. The first snow survey at the beginning of January was at about 28% of normal. And the second one was done right at the beginning of the month, was at 52%. But since then, we've gotten to about 73%. So again, we're improving. The storms have gotten a bit colder and we're getting more snow. But those first ones had a lot more rain versus snow. 6-day forecast is looking like the Northern California is going to get some significant amount of rain. Probably not going to be a lot in our area, but there is some coming for this week. I believe it's supposed to hit us this weekend. Atmospheric rivers. So there is, you know, a couple days ago, this atmospheric river, kind of that the third blob back, that was looking like it was going to be an AR1 level in Ventura County, at least. And since then, it's kind of it looks like the atmospheric river is going to be hitting north of Santa Barbara County. And so there's really no classification for an atmospheric river in Ventura County or heading towards Santa Clarita at this time. So, but we will get some rain, but you can see it's kind of just going to miss us. Northern California will get quite a bit more. Reservoir conditions. The reservoirs are in really good condition. You can see in the graphic there that the big two, Lake Shasta and Lake Orville, they are looking really good right at that red line, which is basically where they need to be in the wintertime for flood control. The reservoirs have gone up since the last time I've done a report, about 3.5 million acre feet. We're still above our historical average for this time of year. And recently, since I've talked to you last, the major reservoirs have actually come out a little higher than DWR had anticipated in their January 90%, which is a dry scenario, and their 50%, which is a normal study. So that's good. But like I said, a lot of that is basically those earlier storms brought a lot more rain than snow. So we really, at this time of year, want that snow because that gives us a lot more storage in our natural mountain reservoirs and saves space for when it starts melting so we don't have to do any releases. So Lake Orville, this is kind of what I'm talking about, is basically operating right now within the flood regulation storage boundaries. So there's three lines there. The red line is the top of the reservoir. But in the winter time, you can see you've got those two black dotted lines. And that's kind of where we need to function in the winter time so that there's enough space if storms come for flood control. And so you can see at the beginning of the year, like October through almost to January, the reservoir could have been up at that level if we had had that amount of water. As the storms started coming in January, they had to kind of lower that red line, which tells them where they need to operate to leave space. And so since then, we've had more water come into the reservoir. So our actual storage in blue and our flood regulation storage level in red have met. And so we'll kind of operate based on what storms are coming in and what's safe. If it gets dry again, then DWR will let that our actual storage go up to that second dotted line. And then as you can see, after April, we'll kind of be able to start heading up to the top of the reservoir if hydrology allows us to. So they have started having to make a few releases so that they don't get too encroached, meaning that there's too much water in the reservoir for them to create flood protection for the area. San Luis Reservoir is a little different situation. So our DWR storage is in the dark blue, and it's around 400,000 acre feet right now. You can see USBR storage has a bit more than we do at this time. Right now, DWR is doing their best to pump as much as they can or export as much as they can from the Delta, but there's quite a few regulations kind of during this time for fish and Delta restrictions. So they're doing their best. The good thing is that the Vernalis flows have been increasing, and that's the rivers that are coming from the San Joaquin area, and that helps bring fresh water from the south side of the Delta, which allows us to export more. So we're just starting to see that happen. You can see there's a little tick up there at the end or on the graphic. One thing I wanted to mention was that DWR is still trying to catch up to last year. So there was at the last report that was sent out for deliveries, kind of their first finalization report, said that there was about 800,000 acre feet anticipated of carryover storage for 2024. And you can see there's only about 400,000 acre feet of water in San Luis. So ideally, DWR would want to have that 800,000 acre feet in storage, and then anything above that would allow kind of be added for our allocation. And so they are a bit behind at this time, but I'm not extremely worried because I know that they're still finalizing all the deliveries in 2023. And an example of that is that that last report that they sent out in December said that we had about 50,000 acre feet of carryover supply. And I know from the deliveries that we've made, we were around, you know, 18 to 20,000 acre feet. So there's 30,000 acre feet that they're off just from our agency, and we're a small one. So I can only assume that other agencies are kind of, their numbers are getting corrected as well. So hopefully soon they'll have that information, and I'll be able to give you a more updated report with regards to how far they are before they catch up and kind of when we'll see that allocation change. But at this point, I don't expect the allocation is going to change until they've met this obligation of catching up with the carryover supplies that they are obligated to have in storage from last year for this year. So our operating plan right now, this is the same information, but I have added some highlights in red that I've made some updates to. So I did update the carryover supply. I believe in my last report, I was estimating about 21,000 acre feet of carryover, and I've gotten some updated numbers. So I think we're going to be around 18,000 acre feet, which is still a very healthy supply of carryover to have going into this year, even if we have a 10% allocation. And I've also added the AVEC 2019 exchange water. AVEC contacted us and let us know that they would be able to provide that water to us this year if we were interested. Even at a 10% allocation, they would be able to provide that water. And so Our agreement says they wouldn't be able to provide it until 30%. So this is a really good opportunity for us to take the water, seeing as that it's a low allocation. We are pretty constrained still with our groundwater supplies. There's potentially some more wells that we'll have to account for going offline for maintenance things. I'm not sure if that's going to have a huge impact or not yet, so I haven't added that in until we get more information. But this AVEC exchange water just gives us a little more cushion. If we stay at 10%, it could potentially alleviate some of the banked water supplies that we would need to meet demand. So I think it's a good opportunity to use it and kind of clean the slate with that exchange. With regards to our supplies in January, we were ramping up the groundwater. We were able to meet demands with 35% of our groundwater and 65% imported. And that's basically just Article 56 carryover supply being used in these early months. And our January demands were a bit up from last year, January demands, but we have had less rain. So remember that the comment I made, remember how January kind of dipped down from our normal precipitation. So that is reflected in our demands. And so we had a little bit higher demands in January than last year, but February has very much made up for that. And I anticipate that our February demands will be low. So I think that is all I have. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Ms. Flory. Are there any questions from public attendants? No. Nope. Any virtual meetings, directors? Comments, questions?
Cool.
Good news. It's always good to hear good news, and I'm sure it's good to deliver good news, Ms. Flory.
Hopefully I'll have more information for you next next month, but thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's move on to item 4.3, staff activities presented by Mr. Alassane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm in the spirit of the Valentine and trying to make things short, and my report today is going to be very short. We advertised a new position in the Department of Water Resources, which is a senior hydrogeologist. We started the advertisement last week. One of the things that we mentioned when we put this position in the planning for positions a couple of years last year, and actually before I take the position, there was the idea that we really need to build our hydrogeology and group in inside our internal group, our water resources group. We didn't have any hydrogeologist or groundwater modeler. So this position is going to be focusing on helping us understanding a lot of the hydrogeology in the basin, support the GSP, support also the Water Resources Initiative, and all of these groundwater modeling. Our vision for this position is it's going to help us reduce reliance on some of the consultants, especially doing groundwater modeling and groundwater runs and things like that. So that's the target for us at this point, is we are wanting to hire someone with that skills and capabilities to help support the mission vision of the agency. With that, that's the end of my report. I will take any questions.
Any questions from the public? Virtual attendees?
There's none.
There's none. Okay. Well, yeah, I definitely agree. New hydrologist versus, what, 198 for a consultant, paying something like that every year. It's money well spent, right? Okay, let's move on to item 5.1, conservation program performance overview presented by Mr. Matt Dickens. Mr. Dickens, ready whenever you are.
Yes. Hello, Chair Ozerhofsky and members of the committee. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, you should be able to see my screen.
Yes, we can.
Okay, well, as everybody else has already said, I guess belated Happy Valentine's Day. And unfortunately, while they made quick presentations, my presentation is about 2.5 hours. So I appreciate your patience. I'm just kidding. We got a pretty quick presentation here, about 10, 15 minutes here, providing you updates to a water conservation program update. So let's get started. Tonight's presentation will cover programmatic performance for our residential, commercial, industrial, and institutional customers, as well as from landscape customers through January. I intended to give this presentation in January at the committee, but unfortunately was impacted by some a long chronic health issue that I am recovering from, but still have a ways to go. But I'm here tonight, and I'm glad to be here to talk about these updates. We'll talk about conservation savings performance, a conservation program updates, regulatory updates, and then we'll conclude with questions and comments. So first of all, turning to our residential program, and again, our residential customers comprise about 51% of consumption. That does not include multifamily residential. This is single-family residential, multifamily, individually metered residential customers. Focusing on the FY23-24 year-to-date totals, we can see that our home checkups are continuing to serve our customers. We've seen a decrease in our kit distribution. However, Water Smart Workshop has gone from 13 to 30 at the same period last year. Our smart controller rebates from 63 to 109. Our lawn replacement programs from 4 to 30 for over 34,439 square feet converted this year. 24 pool rebate covers, 27 healthy and efficient landscape program rebates, and a reduction in our high consumption letter and water saving opportunity calls. But an increase in customers visiting our website to learn how to conserve water at home through our various different commercials and videos that we've put together. So overall, we're seeing consistent participation levels with our conservation programs, even though the drought emergency engagement levels have been decreased since July of last year. So customers are continuing to seek conservation services support from the agency. Turning to our commercial, industrial, institutional customers, this does include, again, our multifamily, our businesses, our schools, our public agencies, hospitals, those types of things. This year, we have a huge increase in the number of units surveyed from 16 to 807. We had two apartment complexes that participated in our multifamily program. We installed 861 shower heads, 561 aerators, over 1,148 bathroom aerators, 9 toilet flappers installed to correct toilet leaks, and 29 irrigation zones. We do anticipate that these apartment complexes this fiscal year or next fiscal year will retrofit their toilets to the premium high efficiency toilets, which will be around 2,000 additional installations. Turning to our large landscape programs, we're seeing pretty big increases in our turf conversion projects from the previous year, 1,300 square feet to 5 and over 136,000 square feet. Increases in our drip irrigation programs from 0 square feet to 66,000 square feet. And then customers participating in our healthy and efficient landscape programs. And again, those include things like high-efficiency nozzles, pressure-regulating bodies, master pressure-regulating devices, pressure-regulating valves, and pressure-regulating bodies with check valves. And then we've had over 1,000 irrigation zones inspected with our large landscape program. So lots of activity continuing to persist in this customer class as well. So all in all, program activity is continuing at levels that we typically see during droughts, which suggests us a lot of interest in creating sustainable water conservation programmatic activity from the community. Okay, so if we look at our conservation performance, this chart here shows us our monthly actual versus planned conservation. So what we look at here, the black dashed line, the top line, that's essentially today's population or 2023's population at 272 gallons per capita day. And then we look at the dotted line below it, and that would be a 26% reduction, assuming that we continued in 2% reductions in gallon per capita day in 2021, 2022, 2023. As you recall, SBX7-7 looked to achieve a 20% reduction in gallon per capita day by 2020. So between the end of the sunset of SBX7-7 and the new legislation, we continued in a 2% conservation reduction in gallon per capita day conservation level in the interim until we launched the the water use efficiency strategic plan that aligns and calibrates with the long-term framework. So for the year, you can see by month, we were below our targets all year long in the winter and in the summer. We were 23.2% below the planned conservation level, and that savings equated to about 15,940 acre feet. That's a significant amount of water that our customers conserved relative to the planned conservation levels. You've seen this chart before. This shows us long-term conservation trends dating back to 1995, our baseline period where we get the 272 gallons per capita day from. Then we can see the SBX 7-7 period from 2010 through 2020, and then the interim plan from 2021 through 2023. What we see here is a consistent trend prior to the implementation of SBX 7-7. We can see recession impacts on demand, which is the black dashed line. The red line is our population. The green bars show us our conservation targets, if you will. So the black dashed line was impacted significantly by the Great Recession of 2008. Again, by the 2013-2014 drought, we saw some rebound. We saw some weather impacts. We go to 2021, we were coming back, but still fell below our target. And then we had a significant drop off in 2022 and 2023 in demand due to customer response, drought engagement, customer participation in programs, the implementation of technologies, as well as significant escalated engagement and state conservation calls. So a portfolio of conservation measures contributed to customers responding favorably to the conservation call by reducing their consumption significantly. If we dive into this from just a strictly gallon per capita day for the same period, we can see the trend, which is significant in our gallons per capita day. Here's the 272 baseline, the red dashed line that just popped up. And then here, the black line is our 206 target for 2020. And where we're at today is 160, which is significant because when we look at that, this is a huge milestone in 2023. Our customers have reduced 40% reduction in gallon per capita day, according to 2023's numbers and 2023 population estimates. That's a significant milestone for any conservation program and for any utility to achieve that level of conservation. That's significant levels, and again, it's something that we have to congratulate and recognize in the community, but also understand that while we may have achieved this significant milestone, it's important that we maintain conservation levels because of water, changes in water scarcity and water availability, water reliability, population growth, climate change, all these types of things are putting pressures on available supplies and so on and so forth. But conservation of water use efficiency as a ethic helps us mitigate and create climate resilience as well as sustainability community. But nonetheless, I do want to stop for a moment, recognize all the work that this agency, our staff, our community have collaborated to achieve a 40% reduction. It's actually 41%, which is huge. Will we maintain that? We'll have to look at, it's hard. I don't have a crystal ball, but certainly I think that our strategies going forward, which I'll talk a little bit more about here momentarily, is that we have a strategy to encourage customers to continue conservation where they are, but then also continue to implement change and transformation in the landscape within our community, because those landscapes are high variability and can have a high probability and propensity to rebound or boomerang their usage to levels depending on weather. Okay, so turning to conservation program updates, a couple of high-level items here. One, we have the Water Champions Program, which was launched in January 2024. This is a program we developed to reach out to WaterWise, is out in the public, out in the community, going to shopping malls, businesses, promoting our conservation programs, our Water Efficiency Works programs, providing water sense information, looking for leaks, identifying what types of products and plumbing fixtures are in plants, as well as helping us identify what kind of Energy Star commercial classification they are, which is critical components of the new conservation long-term framework, which we're supposed to collect. So this is a parallel approach, if you will, with multiple benefits that our staff, Dolores Campos, developed a very innovative GIS tool, which can track their progress through the community in real time or near real time, which gives us a real good understanding of how many businesses are responding, which is about a 40% response rate, which is great. And then also how many businesses we're collecting that Energy Star commercial classification on for use for future planning purposes. We're also developing our communication conservation pop-ups. We expect to launch those in March and April. Those will be focused around HOA conservation engagements, as well as parks, public events, to get more engagement opportunities and interact with the community to promote our various different conservation programs. That, again, will be launched in March and April. Our water-saving targets. These provide customers with customized water budgets. We have the tool in a training environment. We need to finish that up for all customer classes that were able to determine a water budget. That would include residential, multifamily residential, dedicated irrigation meter customers. That would enable us and the customers to identify both their agency and state water budget review. And again, it greatly enhances our conservation engagement planning efforts by giving us a good sense of water usage relative to the various budgets in near real time. We're also launching in early March the water demand forecast tool that creates an agency water demand forecast model that staff can utilize and deploy during the water use efficiency strategic planning effort. It'll enable multi-scenario assessments, and it's calibrated with land use data and GIS so that we can maintain it as our community grows. Now we have the Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan. We launched our RFP back in January. That will provide, and we're expecting the responses this Friday. We'll be back before the committee in March with our recommendations, staff recommendations. But that'll provide a framework for long-term conservation planning for the agency. We'll develop strategies of conservation efforts, and we'll engage the community to enhance planning feasibility and constructability. In addition to that, we have launched an effort to assess our current water conservation efforts in parallel with the Water Efficiency Strategic Plan and legacy efforts to determine their G480-20 review. That's a feasibility review. That's an American Water Works Association standard to review critical elements of effective water conservation programs. That will allow, again, parallel assessment of our best practices during our Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan initiative to make sure that we currently are and continue to offer smart and best practice program execution to our customers and our agency community. Lastly, and very proud to say this, and of course I'll have many things to share, but SCV Water executed a Bureau of Reclamation Water Efficiency and Energy Efficiency grant for $2 million. That was executed January 2024. That provides funding for our multifamily apartment programs, lawn replacement programs, smart controllers, drip irrigation, and healthy and efficient landscape programs. Want to give a special shout out to Cheryl Fowler for her support, her due diligence, her leadership on helping get that grant past the finish line. Lastly, we turn to regulatory updates. The State Water Resources Control Board, I've shared this before, we provided letters to their initial proposed regulations in October 2013. We also signed on to an AQUA joint letter. Following that, the Legislative Administrative Office analysis found in its January 2024 report that the recommendations by the State Water Board were complex, difficult to achieve, costly, had inequity issues, and aggressive timelines, and therefore was not recommended as a feasible strategy or regulation for implementation. So we are expecting that the State Water Resource Control Board will provide its final proposed and adopt those proposed regulations for the Conservation Long-Term Framework in July 2024. With that, I believe that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions or comments the committee might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dickens. Are there any members in the public? Directors? Comments, questions? Remarks?
I met Sturka. First of all, I wanted to compliment you on the revised format for the conservation report. I really appreciate it. I think a lot of thought went into it. To have a couple questions. He talks about work on water budgets for various customers. But one of the things I've noted, many of the volunteer water customers, when we get our bill, which shows our annual water usage, one of the months has a zero allocation on it, which kind of throws the rest of the report off. So it's that you or Rochelle, somebody could look into getting that corrected. I've had comments from multiple customers noting the same issue. The other things which I had dealt with water demand estimates. Is that of what are you supposed to plan to come up with water demand estimates?
Mr. Dickens, are you still with us?
Yes, Director Marks, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you now.
Yeah, a couple of things. On the first thing, I appreciate the feedback on the current water budget that the Valencia customer has received. I'm aware of that specific issue where, for lack of, you know, programming expertise, the issue is essentially when there are two billing months or billing periods that are in a single month, calendar month, because billing month and calendar month are not always the same thing. But what it does is it'll take zero to one and then double the other one. Even though if you look at the chart's correct. The graph is off because the graph doubles up. We'll look into fixing that issue and programming. That's the first thing. So I appreciate you sharing that, and we know about it, and we'll take action to correct that. The second question regarding water demand forecasting, yes, there is if I understand correctly, are we going to utilize that tool in the Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan? Yes, we are. The intention is to work closely with our consultants and the consultant group that is awarded the Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan to develop a comprehensive and robust water demand forecast scenario that the agency can utilize, verify, and anchor in empirical data.
So am I understanding you correctly that you have a different consultant who's preparing the water demand forecast?
We have a consultant who has developed a water demand forecast tool that is GIS-based, and then we'll have consultants that will be informing the variables that go into the water demand forecast.
Let me help out. I think I hear what Dirk's asking, Matt. It's a little bit different. The Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan, will part of the scope was to include demand forecasting. Is that what the question is?
Yes, I'm trying to understand what the plan is to develop water demand forecast for now from using the urban plan.
Yes. That scope is contained in the Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan.
Okay.
So yes, that effort will, instead of having Madaus had done that offline kind of before. Right. This will all be done in the context of that update of the strategic plan. Is that right, Matt? Did you hear the difference in the question?
I think I said almost the same thing, but yes.
Yeah, I think you were just answering it with the tool and the plan. Dirk was just trying to get after whether the strategic plan was going to do demand forecasting.
Yes, the strategic plan will do forecasting.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Dickens. Informative as always. All right, let's move to item 5.2, sustainability and conservation staff activities, presented again by Mr. Dickens. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Chair Arthur Hosky and members of the committee. Regarding the sustainability manager's report, we currently have three major projects that we're working on sustainability-wise. One is the management of these agencies' photovoltaic assets, and that is broken down into three pieces. One is the array itself. Two is the economic benefits from the production of electricity. And then three would be the land and facilities. And so we've developed a collaborative management team that has staff from operations, staff from buildings and grounds, and staff from sustainability, myself, that are kind of managing that together. The system is running at about 90% of capacity, which is fantastic. Our monitoring capabilities are working well, and our auditing capabilities, we're able to locate some ability for us to change our account allocations and our current tariff to improve the optimization and utility of the various different RESB CT credits, which are essentially dollars that we can provide to offset costs to other accounts in the agency's portfolio. So the process is working well, the team is working well, and the system is operating phenomenally. And we're looking at one inverter that has, it likes to start up and shut down, but we're working with our consultant to make sure that that's operationally sound. So we're troubleshooting and going through that process now. But other than that one inverter, the system is running at capacity. The second effort is our battery storage project, which the committee approved and the board approved back in August. And we are currently in discussions with the energy utility to determine the extent of which the difference payment from the RESB CT transition, how that might impact our ability to add batteries to our system. And so that is currently a live, active situation, and we are working with our consultants, our legal consultants, and the energy utility to try to determine a best path forward to implement the new interconnection agreement, allowing for the installation of the battery system there. The third major effort is our sustainability plan, which the agency approved back in July. We are currently working with that consultant to update our greenhouse gas emission inventory and other inventories of consumption, of resource consumption from 2021, 2022, and 2023. So simultaneously, those three efforts are currently active, and we're excited to, looking forward to getting to a resolution with the photovoltaic, also getting a resolution with our a battery project, and to developing a institutionalized process or a workflow, consistent workflow, if you will, an automated workflow that allows us to track those energy intensity metrics going forward. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions regarding sustainability.
There's no public comments. Are you directors? Questions? Comments? Sorry, quick question, Mr. Dickens. On the photovoltaic production and credits, If you don't have the number, that's fine. I'll email you. But can you tell me the surface area on those, on both sides?
The surface area of the photo of the PV panels?
Yes.
I can get that. I don't have that. I'll be offhand. I know the system is 4.5 megawatts, if that helps.
Okay, that's fine. And then the study on storing the energy in the battery. Are you comparing, you know, us storing the energy for our use versus receiving credits from the utilities, from the electrical company?
In the pro forma that we conducted for the battery project, which again the board authorized back in August, the battery would take energy for both surplus from the solar and from the utility to fill the battery during optimal rate times of use for the agency. It ultimately would have an impact on decreasing the amount of RESBC CT credits that we push onto the grid, but those are turned internally into more economic benefit by shaving peak demand during high use times, as well as through arbitrage activity.
Okay, understood. Thank you. All right. Well, thank you for that update. Let's move on to item number six, committee plan calendar presented by Mr. Alassane.
As presented to you, this is the most up-to-date calendar for the committee. If you have any suggestions for items that you want to see and you want to staff to present, please provide that to us. And we'll take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
I had a question on the town. Item one on March 13th, probably need to revise the description of that. Looks like we're going to be adopting a water use efficiency strategic plan as opposed to recommending the general manager hire someone to do it.
Did you catch that, Andy?
Yes, I did. Thank you.
Real quick on that, that is, if I understand correctly, the committee in March will be taking staff recommendations to award the RFP to a consultant.
Right. Just saying that that it needs to more clearly indicate that in the calendar.
It sounds like it has already been done. We're adopting the plan as opposed to.
Oh, I see. It sounds like you're adopting the plan. Okay, gotcha.
Okay. Good catch, Director. Just a quick question. Back on the February 20th, so that's being put on the board agenda due to timing constraints. Is that right?
That is correct.
Understood. Any other questions, concerns, no. Directors?
We don't have enough time to get that on the consent.
The board packet has already been released.
Yeah.
Oh, it's already gone out.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay, but no further questions, comments. Let's move to item number seven, adjournment. Thank you, staff. Happy Valentine's Day. This meeting is adjourned.